Oh my god, you ruined it. You ruined it straight from the start.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Alec Mappa Hot Mess with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist. I'm Alec Mappa. I'm a hot mess. Welcome to the show.
And I'm Matthew Dempsey. I'm your psychotherapist.
Oh my god, good thing it's all baked right into the title, right? It's kind of like if the show was just called Shit Show, then it would just be, I miss you, Matthew. I'm being vulnerable.
I miss you too.
I feel like, you know, we've been doing this for nearly a year, which means I get to see you and talk to you every week. And so if I miss you for a week, I'm wondering how you are. I stalk you on the Instagram, and you posted something publicly yesterday that you were feeling a little insecure.
Oh, I did. I didn't realize we were going to just dive into that, but yeah.
It's public. You put it out there. What are you feeling insecure about?
That's true. You know, honestly, I've just been noticing within myself just kind of like a little uneasiness, just kind of feeling like a little insecure. Do you ever have that where you just kind of feel like a little insecure, but there's not
every
like a specific
goddamn
thing.
Day in my life?
But it's not like a specific thing that, you know, you're just like, I don't know, I'm not making enough money or, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm struggling in my relationships. It's not those things. On the surface, everything more or less is kind of okay. But then
yeah, and you
like
did
attention.
Qualify that in your post. You were like, I'm doing really well from the outside, but there's an inner struggle happening.
Yeah, but there's an inner struggle happening. And mostly when I'm taking stock of things in my life and everything seems okay and I'm kind of feeling mm-hmm. that, especially during a time like right now, I chalk it up to just kind of like, well, this is just some COVID shit, right? We're still in a time of a pandemic where there's a lot of uncertainties and insecurities globally. So we can feel that. And so the main thing that I wanted to do is I just wanted to share that because I've been hearing that from a lot of people, my friends, like almost every single one of my clients. But there's not really a whole lot of like public discourse about it. So I just kind of wanted to just try to chime in and kind of add a bit of that flavor to the conversation. And the really interesting thing is I've been noticing how many people have been reaching out like with great concern. And it's incredibly sweet. And I'm so
like I am
for
right
that
now
kind of comfort. Well, sure. I mean, but you're just kind of checking in. But like some people have had real concern, like have been texting me if, you know, I know them personally, been texting me, making sure that I'm okay. And I'm like, I'm okay, right? I'm okay, and I am also feeling a little insecure. So I just wanted to let that be known that both things can be true at the same time.
Of course. And you know what's missing when you say this is a COVID thing is like what's missing is our friendships are very validating. To be around friends who enjoy our company and to be social with people and kind of like, you know, have your social face on or do you know what I mean? To be among friends and to laugh and to that's extremely validating. And to go without that is, you know.
It's really challenging for us because we are social creatures by nature. So when that part of a basic human need is removed significantly, we feel more insecure because it's just kind of like tribe mentality. It's a survival mechanism, you know, strength in numbers. So when we don't have access to that kind of connection, we feel like an angst, even though rationally and intellectually we know that we'll be okay and can survive. On a deeper level, we can feel some of that insecurity. And both of those things can be true at the same time. You can feel a little insecure and also know that you're okay.
That duality.
Duality, yes. Two truths.
Yeah. Speaking of strength in numbers, ours are increasing every single week. We have listeners joining the Hot Mess podcast
because
we're talking
about
mental health and vulnerability every week. If you're a first-time listener, welcome to the show. Don't forget to download and subscribe. We love having you here. My insecurities lately have just been about, it's just really shallow stuff. I gained a lot of weight during, I gained at least 15 pounds during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And, and I'm working out really hard, but, I'm not really changing my diet.
Yeah.
So there's muscle on top of fat. It's kind of like, but it's kind of, do you know what? I'm 55 and I look at my body now and I'm like, that's pretty good. You know, I'm not, because I think for the last 10 years, I was emaciated when I was in my 20s. I could wear anything. I could eat anything I want. And I think for the last 10 years, I've been beating myself up for not looking like that, for not being 110 pounds. And now it's kind of like, I'm good. We're good. But every once in a while, I'm looking at it. I think it's the Instagram thing. Did I tell you? I joined TikTok.
For sure.
I joined TikTok.
You're on TikTok?
For a week.
You're making TikTok videos?
No, I wasn't making. And? I was curious because I wanted to see. I was on it for a week. I was on it a lot, and I was watching just nothing but hot guys. And it was, and then it was like it turned out because we have the time, because I had the time. It was turning into like 45 minutes to an hour every day, and I was like, I took it off my phone because I was like, this is not how I want to spend my life.
Yes. Are you on it? It's also less. I am on TikTok. I haven't made any videos quite yet, but I think I want to. But I really love the videos. And honestly, TikTok videos and memes and GIFs are the only things that have really been getting me through the last year because they're just so fun. I don't follow the guys who are just kind of like there to look pretty and be hot, but I follow so many of the other people who are just so creative, so funny, just like the best videos. And I saw somewhere recently, somebody had posted like, is anybody else's new love language of the last year sending 30 TikToks to somebody at 3 a.m? And I'm like, that's fucking me. I'm just sending TikToks to everybody. Just like all the dumbest videos. And people are like, can you please stop messaging me?
You're a better person than I am because I was just there for the hot. I was following hashtags like tall TikTok, gay TikTok, hottie, whatever. I just wanted to see. But I made all kinds of discoveries. Yeah. I mean, just like, wow, there's no shortage of hot guys out there.
Well, but you know what? There's no shortage of hot guys. But if you can tap into the right videos and then you send that as your new love language to people, then that's maybe how you can connect in some healthy ways as opposed to toxic relationships.
Yes, which is our theme for today.
Me fumbling my way through introducing the theme for today. The most awkward segue. Toxic relationships. Here we are.
I thought that was seamless. It was like silk off a spool. You were just like,
thank you. Thank
it was,
you.
It was so nuanced. It was barely a whisper.
Yeah. All right. Toxic relationships, Alec. Go.
Go. You know, our guest today is Priyanka, who's fabulous. I've been hosting the RuPaul's Drag Race official podcast with her. She's an amazing, talented performer. She's winner of Canada's Drag Race. She's queen of the Great White North. And I'm having a blast just getting to know her and everything. And it's she loves talking about relationships. But when it comes to toxic relationships, the most toxic relationship I've ever had, Matthew Dempsey, has been with myself.
Yeah. Oh,
that's what I got out of therapy. That's what I got out of therapy. The first 10 years of therapy or the first 5 years of therapy, it was not just that I had going out with toxic guys. It's that I gave toxic guys my phone number. It's like everything that they had in common was me. And my therapist said, my question was like, why am I always in this situation? And he said flat out, you're addicted to it.
Mm-hmm.
That this is an addiction of yours. You're used to feeling this way.
Yeah. So let me ask you, though, because I'm kind of curious about it. It's you obviously get to a point where you realize that the relationships that you're attracting say more about you and the relationship you have with yourself. But like just on the surface, what were you noticing? Like what were the kinds of toxic relationships that you were finding yourself in?
I was never anybody's priority. I was never, I was always in it more than the other person, which meant I was choosing people who were not on the same level as me. Because that's
like
what
they were
love,
unavailable.
That's, yeah, who weren't available because that's how I was taught love feels like. I grew up with a dad who, you know, if I was on fire, he'd go, do you guys smell something? Anyway, so, you know, just like, it was, so I was, that was how I learned love from men. And so the pattern up until my late 20s, I mean, it couldn't become more plain, more toxic. It was like, but you know, it's when you're like me and you learn things the hard way.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden your life comes up and you're looking at it objectively. When I went into Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous and I heard other people talking about toxic relationships, I saw myself so clearly. Yeah. In other people. And I was like, well, you know, the problem is somebody said to me once in one of those sessions, you keep talking about the other person, the other person, the other person, what he's doing, what she's doing, what they're doing. Let's take them out of the equation for 1 second and answer the question. Take accountability. What does it say about you that you're continuing to stay with this person?
Yeah, when you're noticing that all of the conversations you're having and all the relationships that you're talking about all those guys are the constants, or sorry, those are the variables. You're the constant, right? So
getting
to reflect on that, it's like, okay, how have I helped to create this pattern over and over and over again? And it gives us a chance to reflect, like the way you're talking about some of the earliest relationships and how that kind of shapes, you know, the types of relationships that we're drawn to later on, you know, for me, even there was, like I grew up where there were certain people in my family that I had to kind of like walk on eggshells with or cater to and all that kind of stuff. So I have found myself in relationships with people who have also kind of been, you know, like I've had to walk on eggshells or I had to be like extra cautious or I had to take care of. But the thing that's important, I think, for all of us to realize, it's not that we're like doing this to ourselves or, you know, we hate ourselves and always have to learn the hard way, you know, and other people can figure it out easier. It's that we find opportunities in life later on where we get to actually have some of those same dynamics. We're drawn to those people because it's a chance for us to then become more kind of woke to that and then start moving through things consciously so we can heal the wounds that we've had. But we can't ever do that if we're trying to change other people. All we can ever do is heal ourselves and, you know, and then have the people that we're attracted to start
shifting. I'm glad you said heal the wounds, because what it did was the accountability gave me space to forgive everybody. And it gave me space to forgive myself. It was kind of like went through so much of like really beating myself up for all the choices I've made. Oh, the other quote I heard is, if you total 3 cars in a row, it's hard to blame the other drivers.
Toxic relationships can feel like several car crashes.
Yeah, maybe you should check. Maybe you're not a good driver. No, it was really kind of like I didn't think that my love was as important as somebody else's. Your love was always more important than mine. And it was all about, you know, as a sex and love addict, it was, I'm using somebody else. I'm using this relationship or this sexual situation in order to fill my own deficit.
Yes, which is not what relationships ever should be. Well, you're coming from a place of deficit. And then because of that, the way that you're approaching a relationship is through a barter system. You're saying, I'm going to do this or I'll chase you this much so that you'll then give me attention and make me feel necessary. And that's not what a relationship should be, because it should be with love, and love is a gift, right? We make sure that we're taken care of. We heal our wounds. We're practicing self-care. So our cup then is full and runneth over. And then we can give whatever excess that we have to give. And that's the approach.
Speaking of wounds and gifts and cups, I was trying to come up with a terrible segue. We have a great guest today.
we have
Priyanka, a drag queen extraordinaire and winner of RuPaul's Drag Race. And we're going to talk to her as soon as we come back.
This is Jess Betancourt, the host of DNA ID, the only true crime podcast that exclusively covers cases solved using forensic genealogy. DNA ID goes behind the headlines to answer your questions about this remarkable new crime-solving tool, how it works, how cases are selected, why the cases were unsolved for so long, and how the justice system is addressing it. I include input from law enforcement to give you the inside scoop that we all crave with a straightforward, no-nonsense delivery. You can find DNA ID on any podcast platform. Episodes come out weekly on Mondays.
Today's guest is the winner of Canada's Drag Race, and in her words, the most boy-crazy person you've ever met.
I've been having a total blast hosting the official RuPaul's Drag Race podcast with her, which you should totally check out if you haven't yet. Please welcome my dear friend, the Queen of the North, Priyanka.
Yay!
Wow.
Yay! How was that for an intro?
I love that intro. I'm so happy to add to this hot mess. The biggest hot mess on the internet right now.
Look at you. You look very butch today with your stubble. You're a hairy beast.
I don't have
beast.
To be in drag until tomorrow. So I've been just growing it out. Every orifice has been growing it out.
Every orifice. All right, here you
Perfect.
Go. This is our opportunity. This podcast is all about getting real, talking about the real stuff.
I'm so excited.
You want to talk about toxic relationships? Go.
Oh, I love I love toxic relationships. Yay. I honestly, it's so funny. I have built this like persona on commenting about toxic relationships. Like I won best Twitter comedy award at the Wowies in December. Mm-hmm. And it was all because I would just talk about my exes all the time online. Now, I have a very interesting past when it comes to relationships. My first ever relationship was a man that I met from Australia, and he told me he was going home for Christmas, and he never came back and never heard from him again. And then the second guy I was dating was named Chase. And it was not good. It got weird. It was very, there was a little bit of a physical altercation at one time. So there's that guy. And the third guy, I met him. He had a boyfriend at the time. And then we ended up dating for a bit. And then I just fell out of love with him. And that was another toxic feeling. Because I was like, how can you love somebody so much? And all of a sudden, the next day you wake up and you're like, never mind, just kidding. And then the other guy, after him, he was also dating somebody when I met him. And then I never trusted him. Always thought he was cheating on me. And then the last guy that I was dating throughout the season of Canada's Drag Race. And then he dumped me right after the finale. So let me tell you something. If you're looking for an expert of toxic relationships, I'm your girl.
Well, Priyanka, we were just talking about there's, you know, a lot of times when we like look at the relationships, we're trying to dissect why each one doesn't work and what's wrong with the person, but also trying to see if there's like a through line, right? Like what's the commonality and maybe what's our part in that? So for you, what have you been able to uncover or notice about, you know, patterns in your relationships?
It's all to do with self-worth. You know, we date these, I'm saying we as in me. So I would date these guys, and it's almost like you can't believe someone actually chose you to date because you're so low on your self-worth. So whenever these guys are doing shitty things to you, you're all like, oh, but like, how could this happen? Like, he likes me. I never have guys that like me. And that's what would help me tolerate all the stuff that I was going through. So that would be the through line. It was all self-confidence because
What were the shitty things though? What were the commonalities? Were there similarities from person to person that they were similarly kind of shitty to you?
Yeah. Was there a through line of shitty that they all had in common?
I mean, the through line that I always, you know, tended to go through with these motherfuckers would be that it would be very like I was always the crossover, I was always the light at the end of the tunnel. So they would be in something a little dicey. And then I would be the, oh, but like I could have this relationship with this person. He has such great energy, great personality, you know, all that stuff. And then they would end up dating me, but then it would just all fall because I would be like a rebound, say. So I'm the light at the end of the tunnel.
I've never been the light at the end of the tunnel. I've just been a tunnel. Oh.
Right.
Just been a fucking tunnel.
Just a tunnel. Darkness.
But you know what? When you said, how could you fall out of love with somebody? That kind of stood out to me because as a sex and love addict, I didn't know if you knew that about me, recovering sex and love addict, I would have sex with people. And in the middle of it, like somebody I went home with and was like, nuts. God, this person is so hot. And then they would do something or say something or make a certain face. And I'd be like, ugh.
Yeah.
Drop out completely. And I'd be like repulsed. And I'd be like, how did that happen?
Crazy when like you think that you, cause I think for me, especially being a person of color and like being someone that's not usually desired by the masses, whenever I'm like attracted to somebody, it's like I'm so attracted to them because like, oh, they must like me and like this doesn't happen that often and blah, 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 blah. But then in the turn of a switch, there was one guy who I met maybe like October, and like he came to a show and he was like so into me, and then you know everyone around me was like, oh my god, Priyanka, like the way he looks at you, the way he does this, the way he does that. But then it just like that became the turnoff. It was like it was weird
because
that,
like, he liked you.
That it's because he liked me, and I was like, oh, this is not fun. What someone actually so yeah. It's a very interesting thing.
Hold on,
your dogs.
One second, please.
Tell your dogs to shut up. Jenison. Someone muzzle the dogs. These dogs, I don't understand. Okay. Like, train your dogs. Train them.
Shut up. You know what you're talking about. You haven't known this real love.
You thought.
Don't hate actually, on my dogs.
You thought that we were here to record a podcast about toxic relationships about me. It's actually your toxic relationships with your friggin' dogs. Because you can never shut them up.
Okay. All right, listen to me. Because there's something about you stood out to me. I'm also a gay man of color. And this is what I'm exploring. There's two things. One, being repulsed by somebody who likes you. Because I've felt that before. Of like, all through college, if somebody liked me, it was like, you're a weirdo. That's not what love feels like to me. What love felt like to me was like a hot guy who would fuck me and then return my calls every 3 weeks. Right? That was like hot.
Three to four weeks.
Yeah. Yes. But then somebody told me that, somebody who's vulnerable with you and somebody who really likes you, that's the riskier relationship.
Yes.
That's the more dangerous relationship. And when somebody said that to me, I was like, I got it, because it's like in those relationships, you really have to show up and be vulnerable and be open to being loved. And I never got that before. The other thing that you said was, as a person of color. Now, as I'm getting older, I'm old. I'm wondering how much of that is us and how much of that is the world. Because as gay men of color, I grow up, see, you know, all the images in the magazines look like Matthew. Everybody looks like Matthew. I'm supposed to look like Matthew. And if I don't look like Matthew, I'm ugly. Now, that's how I conditioned myself. But then I realized that there's a little bit of both. That when I started changing my perception of myself, I recognized more and more people were interested in me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So my question to you is, how much of that is you and how much of that is the world?
For me, it was opposite. Like, I didn't realize that there was this big, like, racism within the gay community issue until I started doing drag. Like, before, I would go out to the clubs, pick up some hot guy in the back room, take him home, and that would be it. And the heartbreak would be the heartbreak. I never thought of it because of my skin color. It wasn't until I started drag and I would be on stage looking out into the audience and watching all these different storylines come to life. I would see the black guy go up to the white guy and the white guy say, sorry, not into black guys. I would see the brown guy approach a white guy and the white guy be like, no, thank you. So I was watching it from a bird's eye view, being like, I've never been treated this way before, but I never thought it was racism, because my mama raised me to be like, well, no matter what skin color you are, you walk into the room and you are just as equal as everybody else. So I never wanted to use racism as an excuse, or I never wanted to victimize myself because of my skin color. But it wasn't until I was on stage watching it go down in the clubs that I was like, oh my God, it's happening. It's happening, and this is bad. I don't want this to happen because I don't want it to be this way, but it's happening. So I think partially it's like, yes, of course, like once you see it, it's hard to unsee, but it's a real thing that we can't ignore. And like, I've also been with people, and I'm sure you have too, Alec, that like, oh, I'm only into brown guys. No, bitch, you're fetishizing my skin color. You're not into me because of my soul. You're into me because of my skin color. Like, oh, you have a fetish to have sex with an Indian guy? That's like, that's not love. So
yeah, no, I could clock that a mile away. It's like, I could be anybody. That's not sexy to me.
No, so it's a thing that's happening, and it's a thing that, like, as a POC, we kind of sometimes give in to, and then that's what can create a toxic relationship. Because, like, with my two exes ago, he said something one time. He was like, well, my last boyfriend was white, and now you're brown. And I was like, why is it a skin color thing?
Mm-hmm. Why was it even brought up?
Exactly. Like, it shouldn't matter. Yeah. But it makes you think, and it's a scary, slippery slope, because the last thing you want is to be so deep in this relationship with somebody who you're really into and then have them end up being a racist.
Yeah, Alec, I think what you were saying earlier is also kind of like the important part of it too, which is like, there are two truths. Like, racism is a real thing. We exist within a racist society and culture. And also, that is going to impact any non-white person, you know, in a way that it can be, to a certain extent, internalized. And so then it becomes kind of like the task to be able to call that out kind of, you know, within any person of color, to be able to check in on that stuff and how much that can fuck with, you know, thinking about self-worth and value and how we move through the world and those kinds of things. And also still recognize that it exists and it's something that needs to be, you know, attended to and taken care of.
It's those two things that can be going on at the same time. But it's kind of like, okay, so when I was 16, 17 years old, I went on a trip to the Philippines. We used to go every couple of years to visit my relatives. And this was my first trip as an adult. I wasn't a kid anymore. I was a, you know, teenager. And I remember driving home from the, driving to my aunt's house from the airport. Every billboard had somebody that looked like me. Every movie poster had somebody that looked like me. And then it occurred to me, oh my God, two things. This is what it must be like to be white. And to see yourself. And then the second thing was like, oh my God, I am gorgeous. I never thought of myself in those terms before as the toothpaste guy or the boyfriend. Right. It was just like, that was a major step for me in altering my perception of myself because, you know, there's, when you, Matthew is really great at making me recognize that two things can be going on at the same time. Because I grew up in San Francisco. I did grow up around a lot of people that look like me, but the pervasive media did not represent that. Did not mirror that to me. But my day-to-day life, getting on the bus, going to school, blah, 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 blah. I saw people who looked like me all the time. And it wasn't until I moved to New York where I feel that people were more economically segregated and more racially segregated than they were in San Francisco, just because San Francisco is a postage stamp of a city. It's 7 miles by 7 miles. You can't walk 2 feet without bumping into somebody. It was pointed out to me that I was othered more when I moved away, when I moved out of SF.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like, I wasn't othered until I started drag and realized what my message was and that skin color.
Did you grow up in Toronto?
I grew up in Whitby, Ontario, which is 45 minutes outside of Toronto, around white people. Everyone was white. And I remember my mom just told a story. She said that one day I came home because my neighbor said I was brown. And I was like 4 years old. And I ran and I was like sobbing, like couldn't catch my breath. Like, you know, like, Jesse called me brown. And she was like, well, like, look at your skin color. You're brown. I had this like aha moment to be like, oh my God, I am brown. And it is one of those things where like these like racist things are things that are put onto us from our parents. Like my mom was like, you're brown, celebrate it. Who cares? And that's something that always stuck with me. But it does dive into now growing up, coming out of the closet, finding yourself in your career, feeling a feeling the way that people look at you because your skin color, that then end up, you know, being toxic in your relationships because like with these white men who I've dated, it's almost like they were doing me a favor by dating me, which then created a toxic energy, which then made me, you know, I always say that like you could be with anyone, but there's something about being with specific people that can make you so toxic. I have started arguments. I have screamed. I have cried. I have started arguments for no reason. I've done it all, but that's not who I am. That's not who I think I am, but because of my self-worth and because of their past and how we met and the foundation that we built the relationship on, that's what caused all of that fighting. Like the fighting. Oh my God. There was one time where I went to the bar and with him, not this last relationship, another one. And he bought a girl a shot, like a girl, like his friend. And because I just did not trust him and I did not feel like he was treating me right ever, him not buying me a shot turned into like a 24-hour fight.
Betrayal.
Oh my goodness. Betrayal. How could you? Where's my, you know, you don't care about me. All these. And I was like, and now looking back, I'm like, what the hell, bitch? Like, just go buy yourself a shot, you know, treat yourself. Yeah. But it was like.
I know, but you just said it. You just said it. The core of it to me is it's like the red root, flag the to foundation. Me is you don't care about me.
Exactly.
Yeah. You don't care about me. That was kind of like, that was just like the match being lit is like seeing the attention paid to somebody else is enough to like, you know, it would trigger you.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that I do want to talk about on this podcast is my most recent boyfriend.
Oh, tell us.
So I've talked about him plenty.
All right, that's a happy face.
So not one.
Is he the one? Was he in the one in your TikTok videos on the couch? Is he the one on the laid out on the couch in the TikTok videos?
Hold on. So there's two things I want to talk about. So there's that guy, he's the best, but there's a guy before him. So I was dating somebody throughout the season of Canada's Drag Race. And I promised myself that I would not date anybody throughout the season because it's all about me. And I want this to be all about me. And then you meet this guy and then he's the best. And you never thought you're going to meet somebody. And he was at the finale of Canada's Drag Race at the Phoenix Concert Theater in Toronto. And he was so drunk and he was like flaunting himself all over the place. And he wasn't paying attention to the finale. He was such an embarrassment. And then right after the finale, like a month-ish later, he dumped me right after my uncle died. And I did have this moment where I sat there with myself and was like, why do I attract this type of person? So the question is, so now I'm with a great guy and everything's great. But before this, my question to you, both of you, is like, how do you break that pattern and how do you like let yourself go? Because now with this new guy, like he's talking about shit in the future and like that scares the shit out of me because future doesn't exist in my past relationships. They did as a kind of thing. So how do you let go?
So I'll jump in and I'll say that in kind of like in my experience and all the kind of professional work that I've done, I could probably say that the two greatest things that stand out as kind of variables in this is one, the earliest relationships that we have. So checking in with yourself, like really kind of doing that deep dive. It's so cliche therapy shit, but really doing a deep dive and checking in on what are those earliest relationships with parents or family members and what kind of patterns have I noticed in the kind of guys that I'm into or relationships that I've had that also maybe mirror some of the earliest relationships and what kind of childhood trauma am I trying to address, but using all the same bullshit tools that I've ever used that have never gotten me anywhere.
Right.
So that's one, checking in on that part. And the second part is also checking in on the cultural stuff that we've been talking about. So obviously, you know, growing up as a marginalized person, oppressed because of race, ethnicity, things like that. Also growing up as a gay person, you know, what are the marginalized experiences that we've had that shape a very negative and irrational belief about ourselves? And how much does that play out in the kinds of relationships where we're chasing after approval and acceptance from people that we value and think, you know, that we need that attention from? So checking in on those two things first, noticing your own patterns, and then being able to start working through that consciously.
And that's so vigilance.
I just want to, Alex, shut up. What I want to know is this. You shut up and spank me, baby.
You shut up.
So we're talking about talks.
You guys have a toxic relationship.
Spit on me. I want to know, like, what is the account? So when we're saying the word toxic, like we often villainize the person that we were dating. Like all my exes are the worst people in the world. So what is the accountability that we have to put on these people, or does it matter on our exes?
Yes, it matters.
That's a good question.
First of all, when we're talking about a toxic relationship, we're talking about the relationship, the dynamic. We're not assassinating another person's character, whether it be somebody else's or our own. You know, like you said earlier, this is not who I am, but sometimes I just get my shit stirred up. Yeah, because that's not who you are. That's what you do. Right. And so it's about the kind of conflict of what each person is doing when they're in a very vulnerable and intimate kind of relationship. So making sure that you're kind of checking on that stuff first, how you frame it.
I think the accountability piece for somebody who's been in a marriage for 19 years, I mean, where we are with our stuff is like we have to own it, but we've made the investment and the commitment to be together. So that's maintenance. However, until you're in a relationship that's long-term, the accountability piece for me was really about myself, and that took vigilance. Like just watching my words, watching my expectations. When I was starting to get better, it was very telling. I had a boyfriend and I said to him, you know, you shouldn't be so nice to me. I'm not used to it. Like I said that. And he said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. I'm your boyfriend. I want to be nice to you. And Alec, if you're in a relationship with somebody and you love each other, they should be nice to you. You should be. And so what I was learning for my part, in my words and in my actions, what I had to learn was how, what I was taught that love felt like, this is what love feels like to me, was really destructive and toxic. And I had to relearn what kindness to myself felt like, and accepting kindness, and accepting graciousness, and accepting affection for another person, because I learned that I didn't know how to do that. I could be physical with somebody. I had no problem doing that. But it was very hard for me to be, like you said, vulnerable. When somebody said, the person who shows up for you is the dangerous relationship. Because that calls on you to kind of show up and be vulnerable as well.
Yeah, that's what you've said, Alex.
So shut up.
So many times before about, about the relationship. You know, you kind of...
So shut up. that part.
You've attributed so much shit to the relationship that you had with your dad, right? Where you always felt like he wasn't validating, he wasn't attentive. Whenever he actually was even participating at all, it was just to criticize. So you were mostly just kind of chasing after his affection for so long. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just maybe such a surprise that for, you know, in your adult life then, you keep chasing after people and you are only interested and attracted to the people who aren't going to be there or who will just criticize you and not be nice to you because of the fact that that is just a familiar dynamic. And as human beings, we don't like change. We follow and grasp after what feels familiar because it's comfortable.
Right. When my therapist told me it was an addiction, I was like, what are you talking about? He said, you're used to the chase. You're used to that's your high. That is where your adrenaline, that's erotic to you, is the chase. That's what's sexy. And then all of a sudden I was realizing it when I looked at it objectively, having to chase after somebody to make them like you is gross. It's just kind of like, ew, like I don't want to be that person anymore. And I was that person for so long. Right. But, you know, but like the chase is what felt familiar. The chase is what, that was my default position.
Wait, I just want to jump in real quick. I just want to say a couple of things for people who might not totally identify with all of this because, you know, for a lot of people, it very much is kind of, you know, an addiction and something that needs to be treated in that specific way. There's a lot of people also that it might not necessarily need to be even defined as an addiction if we're just really hyper-focused on the patterns of dysfunction that continue to exist. So noticing that and also being careful to be kind to ourselves, Alec, maybe not to call it gross and beat ourselves up and shame ourselves. For it, but to be able to call it out as something that is kind of off the path of love and being able to then gently, you know, kind of redirect and experiment with some new, maybe more uncomfortable ways of approaching relationships.
For the record, just the only thing I have to add to that is I had to identify my problems as an addiction because I couldn't stop seeing I was in a toxic relationship that I refused to leave. That I knew cognitively and objectively it was a bad relationship and I stayed in it anyway. And that when I knew that, that's when I had to identify it as an addiction in order to get better, in order to move on.
Yeah.
I have a question. And it's not what's my name, don't worry. Is there any kind of toxic behavior that's, this is gonna sound so messed up, but like, is there any kind of toxic behavior that is healthy behavior as well? Like, say I wanted to post a photo to get some guy's attention, or say I wanted to like subtweet about an ex. Yeah, say I wanted to post a thirst trap, or say I want to subtweet about an ex that made for good content online. Like, are those things okay? Because I've had an ex come up to me and be like, were you subtweeting about me? And I was like, yeah.
Alec, what are your thoughts? Whatever. I'm curious.
I want to hear your thoughts first.
Okay. Well, I would probably liken it to, you know, if you really kind of like break it down in basic terms. We're always going to do some shit that's not just about kind of pure love and health. You know, look, we're not going to be Mother Teresa ever. We're always going to do some shit that's just very human and ego driven. It's more about how can we have the majority of our decision making and motivation in life come from a place of strength building and growth and healthy living. And then also, like, you know, kind of less of the stuff. It's kind of like, all right, you want to make sure that you're eating healthy, you know, maybe 5 days out of the week, and then you eat some shit a couple days of the week, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's just finding the right balance on it and being very conscious. It's kind of like, if you're going to do it, at least be conscious of it.
Just own it. You're saying own it.
Yeah, I think, it sounds like it. Because, like, I love talking about my exes online because, like, and I'm not, like, bashing their names. Like, I'm not saying, like, and one time this, you know, I guess I kind of bash them on this podcast. But, you know, it does create, like, as an artist and as, you know, a drag queen that's been on this reality TV show where fans know me out of drag. I'm not like a Beyonce where they know nothing about my personal life. Like, they know everything about me. They know about my coming out story. They've watched me on these 10 episodes on Canada's Drag Race. Plus, they all follow me now. So there is that, like, my fandom needs that relatability to kind of stay in tune with me. So it's like, sometimes, although it might be a little toxic-y, it does give my fans that, like that look into my life, which I don't mind giving them because we all go through shit. We're all mad at our exes sometimes. We're all, you know, betrayed sometimes. So I tend to play into that, you know, kind of very, very like Taylor Swift of drag vibes.
Where do you draw the line? When is stuff, what's personal Like, if you're like, yeah, I'm not going to post about that. Do you have anything? Do you have a line in your head?
A boundary?
I think now that I'm in something healthier, like, I just don't even really talk about it because it's healthy.
Okay, it sounds like you're a little more protective of that.
Yeah, it seems like now it's like, because also when I was dating this guy during the season of Canada's Drag Race, I go, you know when you can watch yourself have conversations with people and you watch yourself yeah. like, you're watching yourself lie to yourself and it's embarrassing because there's so many yeah. conversations that I had with people that were like, yeah, but he's a great guy. Like, I love him. Like, we're going to last so long. I have a feeling like he's my next boyfriend for sure. And all my friends are like, yeah, hun, cool. Like, good luck. And they, you know, your friends see it. Your friends see it before yeah. you see it. And yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's like you talk yourself into these toxic relationships because you want your friends to justify and tell you that you're doing the right thing because that reassurance means like, okay, I'm not crazy. This is normal.
Yeah.
No, I was surrounded by friends who kept it real to the point where I couldn't talk to them. They would be like, don't talk to me about him. We have the same conversation over and over again. So now as you're making the transition into a healthy relationship, what do you feel like is the biggest difference in you?
That's a great question, Alec. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
I would say
she's my granddaughter. Priyanka's my granddaughter. I'm obsessed with
you.
I'm obsessed with you. Yeah, that's how we refer to each other. What's the biggest difference in you?
It has to be the self-worth, and it has to be like doing things for me and knowing when someone looks at you for your fame versus looks at you because they could see your soul and connect with it. Like there's been so many guys that like, you know, see the sparkly smoke and mirrors Priyanka and I've let them in and it's only burned me. And with, you know, the latest healthier relationship that I'm in, it's, I could tell he liked me from a year ago. He messaged me this guy because I was trying to get a tattoo cover up, but he's a tattoo artist. And it was never about, oh, like, tell me secrets about Drag Race. Or it was never about, so how'd you start drag? It was just all about, like, me as Mark, as a human being. And I think that it's knowing and you have to be willing to accept a more vulnerable side of people is what... is the hardest thing I've had to do this last couple months is opening myself up to somebody, but it's been the healthiest thing because I'm accepting love in the way that I deserve it.
Yeah. I love that. I love that because what that does is it becomes a deal breaker. I mean, whether or not you keep going on with this guy, if you find yourself in another relationship and it doesn't feel right and it doesn't line up with 100%. Who you are and what you feel you deserve, it becomes harder and harder to stay in those situations. Because I found myself ping-ponging back to the old stuff and going, ugh, this is so gross. I can't do this anymore. I'm worth more than this.
Yeah, it's self-worth. And it's so hard to find your self-worth. Like I've been very lucky to be on this show and be called the trait of the season and have all these opportunities where, you know, people are now desiring me and I'm great in drag and great out of drag. So I just think for those who are listening, who are on the search for their self-worth, it's like, be as selfish as you can be because only you can fulfill yourself. No, nobody else can do it.
Yeah.
Wow. We love usually that. Ask people to end on a hot message, but I think you just did.
Yeah, that's a really hot
You're welcome.
I love you so much. Where can people find you on your socials?
You can find me at The Queen Priyanka on Instagram, The Queen Pri on Twitter. You can find me on TikTok. You can buy my merch online. I have a bunch of music coming out in the spring. I'm Alex's granddaughter. I'm Matt's babysitter. I'm here.
Yeah, booked. You're so talented. You're so talented. And I'm so glad to be your friend. And I was a big fan of you on the show. So for us to start our friendship virtually and everything our rapport was like this immediately, you and I. So I really appreciate that. We also are both hosts of the official RuPaul's Drag Race podcast, which is released every week. So listen to us on that. Priyanka, we love you. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Anytime. A show that is called Hot Mess is my kind of show.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, man, that was a really good one.
Yeah, that was great. I loved it.
You know what? The thing is, like, with you, I love watching you be good at stuff. I love watching you kind of explain things to me in a way that, like, it's like when I do this podcast with you, there's so many aha moments. Like, you break things down in a way that I'm kind of like, oh, yeah. I like seeing your expertise in action.
Oh, my God. Thank you. And I love all the comedy you bring to it. And also being able to explain things in just kind of basic terms. Sometimes I get caught up in the clinical
perspective. I'm a basic bitch,
but you
is what you're
out
saying.
Perfectly.
you're really good at it. And so you should have an objective confidence about what you do. You're really good at what you do, is what I'm saying.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
When you're feeling insecure, just know that because of that, you are making people's lives exponentially better. And I'm going to switch things up, and that's going to be my hot message of the day. First of all, my first hot message, A, download and subscribe, because we're saving the world one hot mess at a time. but B, it's really kind of like, you know, when I said that self-worth takes vigilance, you really have to zero in on the things that you really genuinely like about yourself. What I know is true about me. And even if it's just a little thing, you know, it's kind of like, I make people happy. I'm a good friend. I'm a good listener. Just kind of like, and build on that. Because for years, I just concentrated on all that crappy stuff.
Totally. Yeah, it's really important. Practicing gratitude and affirmations has been a major game changer for me in life. And I'm talking about practice it, like actually sit down and write these things down every day. Because it's something that just shifts your perspective from scarcity consciousness to abundance consciousness, from I'm not enough and my life isn't enough to I'm more than enough and my life is, like, you know, overflowing with all the good shit. It changes your perspective in a way that you see things more positively and also can more courageously and non-judgmentally explore the other opportunities for growth within you, so that it doesn't keep you complacent in your development in life. It actually opens the door in the most motivating and effective way for you to make some of the other changes you want to make, knowing that you're already starting from solid ground.
Because it never
ends. That's my hot message. That's my hot message. It
never
ends.
It's ongoing. It's ongoing. Yeah. Okay, big boy. Where can people find you on your socials? I love calling you that.
You can find me on Instagram at MJ Dempsey Psych and Twitter too, and Matthew J. Dempsey Psychotherapy on Facebook. I stutter because I don't think I'm really going to use Facebook and Twitter anymore, because I just don't really use it.
Really? I'm using Facebook
less, but I feel that's enough.
Listen, when I go off of Instagram or Facebook, I'll let everybody know. But in the meantime, you can find me at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Alec Mappa. You won't find me on TikTok because I quit. You can also find us both at Stage 29 on Twitter. Send us your questions. We love hearing from you. We're so grateful that you tune in week after week. Gratitude. See me leading with gratitude.
Yes.
And, you know, because without you, there'd be no point in doing this. So thank you for listening. And tune in next week for more hot mess fun. Download and subscribe.
Bye, everybody. This podcast has been produced by Stage 29 Productions for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast does not constitute medical or professional advice, do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. The views expressed by the hosts and guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. For more information, please go to stage29.tv.